China, and then we are asking the questions, but I mean, since Friday, we haven't applied too much to the citizens, but we are asking simple questions.
Thank you. Chair, the honorable members of the committee, the chairperson and the deputy chair of the board, the non-executive directors and colleagues, good morning. In our last engagement with the honorable committee, we did respond to most of the legal questions, and in the interest of time, we would not repeat those responses, perhaps allow honorable members to ask for clarity seeking questions on those responses. There have been quite a number of
advocates. There is a request I see on the agenda here that you seem to be operating in a dark room. We don't know whether you are officially in the power of that chair. A request
that relates to the legal costs and the concerns, genuine concerns raised by the honorable members. I must confirm that the board shares the same concerns, and yet that's the reason we have been required to develop a strategy to reduce the legal costs. Maybe let me start by explaining what the components or the driving factors for escalation of legal costs. In the last meeting, I did indicate the role of a legal, an internal legal department within an organization vis-a-vis practicing attorneys and advocates. Where the three components that an internal legal resource support business, it is in the main through the drafting of legal opinions or advice that we give to business. It is the drafting of legal documents. It might be contracts, in the case of parliament, or additionally, might be the drafting of legislation. The third component is management of litigation. So if the internal capacity does not competently discharge these three components, these then tend to contribute the escalation of fees for legal costs. If your internal resources do not write legal opinions when the organization needs legal guidance, they always rush outside of the organization. When you go outside, the service provider must be paid for rendering that service. If you must go outside to have a contract drafted, a service provider would require to be paid. That contributes to legal costs. The management of litigation, which is a complex process, helps reduce these legal costs. We took the committee through a process that we've introduced in our last meeting in an attempt to reduce predecessors. Good or bad. And in law and successors in title, we are obliged to take the good and the bad. What we are trying to demonstrate is we've inherited challenges. We've developed strategies to address these challenges. And by all indications, the strategies demonstrate that we are working and succeeding. The second issue relating to cost relates to whether or not these litigations, the organization derives value for money. I can share with the committee that in the period that I've joined the corporation, we have never gone to court not knowing why we're in court and what is it that we seek to achieve by being in court. Yes, we might not be pointing to billions that have been lost to the corporation, but we can certainly point to positives that have mitigated expenses for the corporation. The case in point relates to all the irregularly awarded contracts. And inconsistent with the rule of law, we cannot simply, because there was a wrong, and take the law into our own hands. We are unfortunately required to approach a competent court of law to have that irregularity removed. And that costs us money. It is a necessary intervention, because what it does, where there has not been a competitive process to identify a service provider, we are unable to give assurances to committees like yourselves, to whom we account to, whether or not there's value for money. Whether or not we paid a price that is market related. So we've managed and successfully set aside all of those contracts. What we simultaneously do, and this is what the Constitutional Court has said, a service provider whose services were irregularly acquired is not entitled to the full value of the contract. So if a service provider charged us 50 million to render a particular service through an irregularly acquired contract, when that service provider, the overheads or expenditures set at 30 million, in law, the service provider would not be entitled to compensation beyond the 30 million. So I mention this to demonstrate the consequences and the benefits to the organization just by having that irregularly acquired contract set aside. Yes, there would be instances where as litigants, we've been to court and there is an outcome. We do not recklessly come to a decision to appeal a judgment. There's serious consideration. There is an invitation at times of a new pair of eyes to look at the circumstances to advise. A case in point is when we had a dispute with the service provider and a court ruled in favor of the service provider in a dispute that related to the termination of these irregularly awarded contracts. We sat down with the service the contract was irregularly awarded, the contract is set aside. But where we took issue was the court order that says the service provider was entitled to the full benefit of the contract. Again, we did not rush to appeal the decision. We were ordered to go back to arbitration to resolve that issue. Arbitration in itself costs money. Mindful of that, we avoided going to the arbitration by initiating settlement discussion with the service provider. When the service provider proved difficult and unreasonable, we were left with no option but to join the SIU in its appeal of the judgment. And the judgment has come out on appeal, ruling on the well-established principle of law that a service provider that irregularly benefited from a contract is not entitled to the full benefit of the agreement. We have seen some of our parties that we have litigated on coming back, looking at all the developments in court decisions, agreeing and making proposals. We are sitting with a 300,000 proposal from one of the service providers. We are interrogating that proposal. There is a recovery of money that were lost. In this regard, I can refer to people who received bonuses that, in our view, and those of the SIU, were not entitled to those bonuses. People who defrauded the organization through bursary schemes. Those matters are before courts. Regrettably, whenever you engage in a litigious process, litigation dictates and assumes its own lifetime. But we are quite confident of the prospect of success on those matters. So we do not, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, engage in litigation without having thoroughly assessed our situation. The last issue I want to touch on in the interest of time is the issue that pertains to the cases that we've won and those cases that we've lost. We have given a presentation to the committee and where we have indicated the number of cases that we have won and those that we have lost. Perhaps I would leave it at that, Chair, and hand over to my colleague. Thank you.
Other stakeholders, the questions go that shows the flow that the service provider was, outside internet service provider was sourced through our supply chain process, and the service providers followed a methodology where they went to our job description, and from various job descriptions, they uplifted the different competencies which are already in our job description. From that, the service provider, being the expert in this, produced draft competency dictionaries, and they went through a process that we call it validation process, where they engage the stakeholders, that is SABC, for them to confirm if they have captured their competencies correctly. And Chair, I can confirm that those respective dictionaries were approved by respective GE of various divisions. In addition to that, it's important to note that the service provider also asked whether they should, can they have the opportunity to engage with other stakeholders. And among those stakeholders that requested to meet with the service provider, it was organized labor, and that opportunity was given. After that was done, Chair, I can confirm that then the service provider compiles a questionnaire derived from the competency dictionaries. And it is that questionnaire that was used to collect data and to produce the skills audit report. I just want to dismiss one perception that has been created by some of the colleagues in different platforms, that the skills audit was meant to capture everything about my competency. There was no intention that the skills audit must now measure if I have the knowledge and the skills that is contained in the degree in human resources, if I'm in human resources. That was not the intention. The intention was to capture the competencies that are reflected in the job profile. We make an assumption that those that have inherent job, minimum job requirements, example, if you occupy the position that requires a degree, obtain the degree, we make the assumption, and the field audit service provider would have done the same, and that's why the methodology was chosen, to only use competencies that are in the job description, that they bring along, are confirmed. If you are in HR, you have HR degree. If you are in finance, you have finance degree, and that is continued. And insofar as whether we should use the skills audit as part of section 189, we have responded in short by saying the deployment of staff into new positions and new job profiles must happen first before we can consider using the outcome of the skills audit. There are two reasons to that, Chair. The first being, please remember the skills audit, when it was conducted, it is relative to the position which you were occupying at that date and at that point in time. But the fact that we are talking about employees that may be affected, it means they are no longer in those positions. It means they are displaced. It means they are in the pool of redundant positions. So it means this individual will have to apply for newly available positions, and or, remember, we may have reported that management, when we were about to issue section 189, management put moratorium on all vacancies. So there will be those vacancies that are part of the newly proposed structure, which will be released. But because those are new positions that do not belong to anyone, all employees will be allowed to apply for them. The second reason why employees will be allowed to apply for those, it is because those are promotional opportunities for some people. It is only fair, it will relative to positions that are still available? Do they have the competence? We can then refer to their skill or in reason, and we can make a determination how big it is, the gap. And once we know the gap, we can then invite them to apply, to express interest, whether they would like to be considered for those positions. And if the answer is yes, we will then subject them to assessment, and we may consider to appoint them with development relative to those positions. But that will be the last option. Thank you very much.
So now here from Ms. Patrick Longobeni, who is GE News.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Chair. My response is to the issue of sabotage, that is, if it continues to lie about the sabotage matter. The SAPC did not mislead Parliament when it last responded to this matter and on the occasion. And on the basis of the information that was gathered initially, there was indication to the effect that there was a problem in the handling and processing of the clip in question. The said clip was ready for transmission, fully edited to the technical and editorial quality standards of the newsroom, almost an hour before the actual broadcast. But because the message was meant to be broadcast at the same time by all news media at 2 p.m., it was communicated to the desk that it had to wait. However, at the time of the transmission, a different clip, the rehearsal version, was played instead of the clip that was pre-processed. Upon conclusion of the internal investigation, which included a desk report on the incident, the implicated employees were charged and disciplined accordingly. Employees were charged as per the SAPC's disciplinary code. And on the basis of this, the most appropriate charges based on the outcome of the investigation were issued. And these included gross negligence, alternatively dereliction of duty. In total, four employees were involved. One employee was dismissed. One employee got a final written warning and is back at work. One employee was cleared and is also back at work. And one freelancer was unscheduled immediately after the incident. From this process, one employee has since instituted a defamation case against the SAPC, and the corporation is defending the case. The corporation is of the view that any further comment on this matter could prejudice the SAPC's ability to defend itself. But as indicated previously, the SAPC still intends to furnish the committee with a full report once the matter is concluded, which is the matter that's before the court. And court documents from both sides of the matter have been provided to the citizens. Thank you, Chair.
We'll now hear from Ms. Yolande Pampillon on the usage of the bailout.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Board of the Committee, my Chairperson of the Board and Board members and other committee members and colleagues. I will briefly share with you the detail around the trend of the bailout and utilization in the past years, which is the first tranche. Maybe just to take a step back and sketch the history, we applied for 3.2 billion rand. It was made up of three main categories, being trade and other payables, content and long-term capital. We received 2 billion rand on the 31st of October last year, at which point we set about to determine at the detail line item level which items will qualify for the funding based on what we applied for in our application as well as what the appropriations bill captures in terms of debt obligations. We removed things like any possible irregular and fruitless expenditure. We removed all the legal fees, for example. We cleaned out every single line item that was uncertain in some shape or form, and in fact we then ended up reporting, as you can see on the slide on the screen, against three main categories, with each of those being uncertain by a line item level report. Committee members have sight of the detailed report. We then set about settling those items over the course of the past 12 months, and again we report at a detail level against each of those items as we have made the payments. A few payments remain outstanding on trade and other payables, accruals, and the other clearing item, which is good to see clearing accounts for very specific reasons. For example, if there's a court case pending, etc., we have not yet settled those amounts, and hence they remain outstanding. If you then look at CV content as a long-term capital, having gone through a very rigorous process once again to ensure that the 800 and the 400 million is defined at the line item level, is applied towards content and capital that will see a return on investment in whichever period is appropriate, but that it will definitely bring value to the organisation. We have then been settling payments against that in the same manner as the detail line item level. And again, you have a report that speaks to the content, for example, that has been settled. I've just a brief note on it. The content is featured in terms of the registered offices today, and therefore it does appear that there might be a disproportionate amount in Cape Town in the Western and Gauteng, but it is because of the registered offices. We do, however, track also at a practical level where the actual production takes place today. So we do the forecasting each month. It is updated for the coming months, and because we are keen to spend the money in as soon as is possible, but also in the most prudent manner. You will notice that, for example, CapEx, the spend has been very slow. That is because we have gone again through a rigorous process that turned out to take longer than we anticipated to ensure that the funding is spent on a project that will take the organisation forward into its digital era. Naturally, the events of the last 6 months disrupted our procurement processes, and as such, that spend is not taking place at the pace we want it to. There's also quite an extensive internal process through which business units who wish to have access to the funding need to go through to apply for funding, and we have a committee with senior officials that oversee such applications, very similar to a banking application. So thank you very much, Chair. I think the detailed report is available for committee members, and when there's an opportunity, I would be happy to engage on the question. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Those were our responses. I will now hand over to the Honourable Chair for guidance.
Honorable Fandam, please.
Honorable Fandam.
Okay.
now as we speak. Because you are alleging that the stakeholder that did this, blah, blah, blah. I will not go into it because of time. This question is related both to Advocate Banara and Mujahid Musi. On the skills, what is your initial response?
100% that they explain that this is just a matter of safety. You apologize to the country of what transpired on the day. Because as I was listening to the general manager or the head of HR, then she was explaining for me, that is why I didn't have a job then, because you are the only one other than telling me. So the union said that no one is really in charge. Why are you telling people from such a high? Because what would they increase to sabotage the president of the country? Why would you reinstate people that have committed such a crime? So I think it's important that this on this center, I am not happy with the response that one has received. So I think here the chair of the board, the SFC must just issue a statement and apologize to the kind of what has happened in this thing. Everyone, and apologize to those employees that have done that before. I hear the response with regards to the new audit on the methodology that we have put by saying that you're using a phone and you ask questionnaires. For me, that's just a response that you check if you've got a degree or what. What about supervision of prior learning? Because these are things that you need to take into consideration. Recognition of prior learning, these people have been sitting here. Sometimes you can take a person with a university degree and put a person as a producer. Perhaps that person might not have the skill, but have the qualification. So I think, and the unions are saying that they will never engage on this part, but I think perhaps, because the last time the producer is something that should be used by other counterparts, but perhaps if it's really, really effective for the SAP, so one must ask that question. Chair, I think also one of the things that makes me worry is the issue the issue about the certain employees with skills, especially the one that was taken off air. Why did we not wait until the person is off air and charge them testing? Why are we so? Because that is why I'm saying chairperson of the board. Perhaps the way they that is why you would see that labor is always reacting on issues that you are doing. You can't take someone off air. You need to give the person a notice to say hi again. You know who was suspended for the same thing. What was the evidence for the evidence to remove a person that is on air? So I think those issues are known before the court of law. I think we did not give one serious matter to the certificate employees. Can you also speak to clarity on the issue of not trying to get, for some of them, who say that they are both more trying to get through, is it a correct practice to give employees that have not received a new position and opportunity to complete with the remaining vacant posts, especially if they do qualify on those positions? I think, one of the things that the SMEs need to understand is that we want to help them as much as possible. We want to work with your collective, the chairperson of the board, but I think we need to be on par, especially on how yourself and labor are doing in current. One is not happy at all. I think perhaps it's important that you sit down. You have a different way of because I don't see us moving forward with such things. I think, Chair, let me stop there. I will engage on this exercise for the conduct of the panel. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just one thing, just one question to the advocates. You are telling us that you have your own generalized identity, but you decided to go out and force the government. Now, my question is, due to the lack of capacity on part of the general identity,
don't think I move on. I think it has delayed for too long. And the SAPC must then tell us exactly if there is a person that is sabotaging. If there is not, then they must just issue a statement and apologize and apologize. But with the other cases that I caught, I think it's out of order for us as a committee to discuss such cases, because we will have to wait for what the court resolute on, and then take it from there. And I mean, the other cases are operational. I don't think we can go into that aspect of us being operational into an oversight committee, and we then resolute on that. And also, Chair, the issues, I mean, they've raised their issues on. On elimination with the unions and what, and seemingly they are not finding each other on those. Even the CCMA was involved and online meetings that they had. So, it's under perception with regards to what is happening, because now you no longer know what is it that should happen, but with on it, and then we'll then further, let's say, maybe what is it that we need to do after we get the court ruling, and then we move personal sabotage. Then it's only fair that the board can and then issue a statement and say that they do apologize, it was a not a human being's fault, but it was just maybe a technical challenge. I mean, you are breaking the committee backwards instead of us moving forward with the SAPC issues. I mean, each and every time we
to honourable members. I'm going to start with the editorial forum and whether it represents the entire newsroom and also whether I am also represented by the editorial forum. On the first part, on the occasions I have met with the group on a number of issues within the division, the impression that was created was that it does represent the newsroom. But whether that is correct, something I cannot confirm because I do not know. And also, it is a fact that as it stands, the editorial forum is not a recognized structure of the thing. And it is the newsroom. As to whether I am represented by the editorial forum, I can say this. It does not represent me, and it cannot represent me. Just by virtue of my responsibilities as the account journalist, I account to the newsroom and I account to the principal, so I cannot be represented by the structure itself because that would change the nature of my work. The other issue that I need to deal with is the sabotage matter and the set of questions that have been raised or comments that have been made. With regard to the issuing of the apology was issued on exactly the day the incident happened. That was issued to the president and the citizens of the country, apologizing for what happened on that day. And the second part of this issue, it has been raised that there are concerns about how long the process has taken and the cost involved in terms of litigation. It is something that we acknowledge and we accept that it is a process that we are going through as a result of what transpired when the process was completed initially, that there is now litigation that's taking place. And also, as a result of what is going on now with the litigation process, some of the issues that are being raised, particularly about the charges that would have been raised if the issue was what was thought of initially. Because one of the things that had happened, which informed the initial response, was that this is a clip that was prepared an hour in advance, ready for transmission. But at the time of the transmission, something else came. So on the basis of that alone, there was enough reason to believe that there was a problem in how it was handled. That we ended up with a different clip when the actual clip was ready an hour before. So as a result of the litigation process, because some of the issues are coming up in the court process, I wouldn't want to go to the details and get into what discussed now, but I will also take my advice from the board and the corporation itself as to how we should proceed. Thank you,
Chair.
Yes, Honorable Fago.
I think just one point that I think I need to make before the SABC response. I think, Chairperson, we must understand, especially when it comes to the editorial forum. As a committee, as a parliament committee, we have a right to listen to everyone. I don't think the editorial forum said that they are representing the SABC. I think that must be clear, Chair, so that there is no misunderstanding. We know who represents the SABC, but also as a committee, we have an obligation to listen to members of the public, the editorial forum, and whoever wants to come and speak to the work that is related to what we are doing. So I think, Chair, that clarity must be given that not at any point in a meeting that I was part of and the editorial forum said they are representing the SABC, but they do work for the SABC. And if the something they want to raise to the committee, they have the right to protection.
Madam Mugam.
Chair, I think there's something confusing me now. The presentation says the apology was long. We had more than 4 or 5 meetings where this matter was never raised. For the first time now, I'm hearing that the apology was issued. Now, I want to know, before this party is going to sit down, I want to know whether that apology was raised before the statement of sabotage or after, or what happened, because clearly now I'm being confused. We spent more than 4 meetings, that's what you said there, discussing this issue of sabotage. There was never any response that said apology has been sent, because that matter could have long been closed. Now, I don't understand, Chair. Maybe if the board or the CEO, when he responds, must touch on this issue, because I'm just not satisfied with how they've responded now. Okay, I mean, Honorable Van Damme didn't have raised that matter if apology was long sent. I don't understand. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Mlala. Honorable Van, I think when the CEO comes in, rather than come back to that point, can we proceed to get the other responses? I think we're clarifying here on the editorial board. Can we then move to the next presenter? Is it Asia?
In our environment, employee relations is responsible for internal matters up to CCMA, and it is for that reason in our environment, typically you will not employ practicing advocates and attorneys. So it's for that reason, all our cases up until that stage, it is handled by labor relation. And yes, it is correct to say, is employment relationship and discipline a line function matter? The answer is yes, it is. It is the line manager that issues the intention to charge. It is the line manager that deals with the transgression and infraction guided by, obviously, HR, including labor relations, to make a determination of what is appropriate in terms of the charges. And then, based on that, our code of conduct in terms of the disciplinary code will then dictate what is the appropriate charges. The question of would employees during deployment and placement be expected to apply for their position? The answer is no. And please, because I understand the question to be, would they be expected to apply for their position? It means if your position is not affected, meaning in the proposed structure, the position you are occupying is there, is not affected, the answer is no. But there may be an incident, that's where the nuances comes in. There may be a situation where there are currently 20 positions, which are exactly the same, which have been reduced to 10. It would mean 10 individuals are affected, and those individuals, in order to make a determination who must occupy the 10 positions, those 20 individuals may have to compete for those 10. Please, it must be noted that the purpose of doing that is to minimize the number of individuals that would be affected by the actual termination. You will recall, honorable members, we indicated that once we became aware that proposed structures are going to lead to redundancy, we also declared moratorium on filling critical vacancies that are required. And those critical positions, the vacancies are available in the proposed structure. Those will have to be competed for by individuals that are affected. But because some of them are promotional opportunities, they will be made available for all, and those individuals that become successful, they will vacate some positions, and those at the bottom, which they have vacated, will then be made available for individuals that are within the pool. Regarding the skills audit, we are not changing our response. The earlier response was based on the earlier question. The earlier question was, why are we proceeding with Section 189 when we have not completed the skills audit? If I were to paraphrase it, we understood it to be saying, you cannot continue with Section 189 before you complete a skills audit. It was with that in mind, advocate said, a skills audit, it is not a prerequisite for Section 189. And the second part, we understood it to be saying, how would we utilize the skills audit now that we are having it, the results thereof? And it is what I have submitted this morning. We are not changing the response. We are responding to the updated question. The last question is emerged as a follow-up question on the notices that were issued to appointments that are deemed irregular and unlawful. All employees were expected to receive their letters on a specific day, the 19th of October, and respective human resources managers were tasked with that and were given the letters to go and engage with their line managers accordingly, as we have done with when we requested those members to present why SABC must not terminate their services. Unfortunately, in this case, the employee in question, where the question is coming from, could not be reached by the respective HR manager who was going on leave. And unfortunately, he then emailed the notice to the employee. And unfortunately, the employee opened the email. It is clear that the HR manager did not know where the employee was. But because the HR manager intended to issue the notice before end of business on the 19th, he then sent it to the employee. Unfortunately, when the employee opened that, it coincided with where the employee was, and the employee was on air. It was not the intention of the HR manager to remove the employee on air because he had sent the email. But unfortunately, the employee was on air. So we haven't had the opportunity to debrief that further since the HR manager is still on leave. But if there's any other information contrary to this, I will be more than prepared to update the response. But it is what we understood as we stand today. It was sent because the employee was not available. Thank you very much.
Interrogation and accountability. We have a committee of the board to which reports that we've submitted to Parliament sent before the Audit and Risk Committee, again for transparency and for accountability on a number of issues, including the decision making around this matter. Ultimately, the board has oversight over the decision making, which in itself is a deterrent to decisions that seem to serve selfish interests and that do not advance the interest of the corporation. But I must place it on record, sir. Every decision that I have taken has been a decision that has been in the interest of the corporation. The issue of this PASHA, if I understood the question correctly from Honorable Mlala, it suggests that Ms. PASHA is getting paid whilst at home. That is not the correct position. The employment relation of Ms. PASHA terminated in December of 2018. And there hasn't been a single cent paid to her for being at home subsequent to that date. The legal team, the capacity of our internal legal team, as a leader, as I'm sure honorable members would appreciate this, I have a responsibility to build my team, to coach and make them better professionals. Safe to say that there are areas of development, but those are not the reason we employ external resources. The external resources are employed because it is an operating model. Practicing attorneys and advocates are engaged for us to appear in court. Anything other than that is being handled internally. The last issue, Chair, around the allegations of arrogance, we did not intend to be arrogant. I have known myself for the couple of years that I've known myself. I do not have in my DNA an iota of arrogance in my genes. But if that has come across, I profusely and sincerely apologize. Thank you, sir.
About the effect that our negative reputation has
on their perception or decision makers in their world's perception of engagements with the organisation. Similar concerns have been expressed at other forums as well. And today, reputation management is a highly specialised skill, and people actually do it for a profession. And as such, we deem this in the interest of the organisation to appoint a firm for 12 months to assist us with this very sensitive topic. They are working extremely closely with our internal communications department, who oversees all communications on the organisation, and I am sure that there will be a skills transfer taking place, so that when the firm departs in about 12 months from now, that our team will be eloquently empowered to be able to deal with a topic such as reputation management with the same level of skill and expertise. Thank you, Chair. That would be my question.
Good morning, Chair, and all honourable members and dear colleagues. My input would be to respond to Honourable Van Damme's key question on the commercial viability of the SABC, because this is really the part of why we're here. And I'm going to just say a few points here to give clarity. We have a turnaround plan that is a time frame of 36 months. And as the SABC, mandated by the board and approved by the shareholder, we are on month 11 of implementing the turnaround plan. And by all accounts, if you look at the milestones and the objectives that have been set towards achieving these, we have been able to achieve. And that turnaround is really premised on sound business fundamentals. We've been very clear that we want to deal with a high cost base, and in this instance, we're referring to the operational cost. We're talking about the 43% when it comes to staff compensation, as well as the 12% that goes towards signal distribution for Semtech. Concurrently, we're driving growth in a very constrained economic environment where most of our clients are holding their budgets when it comes to advertising and marketing. We are actually fighting, particularly with the competent sales team that we have. But I do need to highlight that if you look at the documents that we've submitted, you'll see that there's been significant reduction in terms of net losses year on year for the SABC, which really proves that the strategy that we're implementing is helping, because we are very tight when it comes to some of these operational costs. We have also, from an expenditure point of view, deliberately ensure reduction. I mean, we moved from close to 7 billion on expenditure to about 6 billion. And this is part of the turnaround plan to deal with all of these non-essential costs. But what is very key, Chairperson, and this is in line with the strategy, we cannot further delay to reduce the cost of signal distribution as well as the employee cost. And this is outlined in the turnaround plan that we've been mandated to do. And I do need to also point out that this is quite belated, because National Treasury, when we got a government guarantee in 2009, this was one of the conditions that was attached, that we need to deal with a high cost base when it comes to employees. The second point is that, and we're doing this because we don't want to be perpetually dependent and being a drain to the fiscal. And hence the need to take these decisive actions in the interest of not just the sustainability of the organization, but the need to fulfill the mandate. I've spoken about the fact that in this journey, in line with the turnaround plan, we've been able to improve our internal controls, and hence we've been able to transition from an audit opinion of a disclaimer now to being qualified with findings and fewer findings at that. We have been able, using the template of this turnaround plan, to stabilize an organization that was essentially hollowed out and rendered dysfunctional. And those internal controls and the need to instill good governance in the business is actually beginning to bear fruit. No longer are we going out to clients with huge discounts, but the focus is on ensuring that we generate sufficient revenue for the SABC. We will share later on, Chairperson, a robust commercial strategy that is enabling us to compete quite fairly in the market. we want to defend our classic revenue. We want to ensure that we win back all of the lost business. There is also a plan to ensure that we engage in new businesses. But very key, and this is what the group executive for sales will take us through, the need to maximize sellout and partner and grow into the OTT space as an additional source of revenue for the SABC. We have committed to the board that we'll be able to break even as the SABC in 24 months' time, and that period is fully in line with the 36 months of the turnaround strategy. So for us, we see that we would be able to be financially viable if we have to do and act on all of the plans that are incorporated in the turnaround plan. The issue around content acquisition and why it's skewed towards Gauteng and Western Cape, essentially this is as a result of the infrastructure in those provinces and huge investment in that sector. But for us as the SABC to try to mitigate this, we've ensured that the so-called marginalized languages, we also get TV properties in respect of that. We have Kiani, we have Mubango, we have Kitapo, for all of those languages that have been sidelined, really. And it is a fact, it's standard in the industry, that the investment in TV content takes long, as you need to build a base from an audience point of view in order to make sure that you can reach a point of seeing the returns on investment and being financially viable. Our group executive for television in the closed session will take us through the strategies around this. And we've also used the bailout funds to make sure that we invest in compelling content. There's been a lot of TV properties that we've introduced, and we're going to continue, especially for the new entrepreneurs in the market. On radio, we're executing on the plans where we can ensure that we convert the 3% market share that we have. We want to make sure that that can be converted in revenue. We are investing quite heavily behind our brands so that the pricing model when we go to the market is commensurate with the reach and the audiences that we have. And I think above all of this, Chairperson, we have a competent team that is committed to this institution. And for us, we are not just driving financial sustainability for its own sake, but it's to make sure that we fulfill the public mandate of this organization. So, Chair, I think what we can then do with your indulgence, we can engage on this when we talk about the commercial plans. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson of the committee and honorable members, those are the responses coming from the SABC side. I have one thing, though, to plead, you know, with the honorable members. I'm really pleading for fairness and justice. It cannot be that unions make an allegation. It means we are lying. But when the SABC present a evidence to the contrary, no one says unions are lying. To use the word lying is a stream. And we may disagree on a lot of things, but I'm humbly requesting the chair to protect us from the allegations that we have lied, because we've never lied as the SABC.
Chair,
I'm
in order.
Yes,
that is
the point of order,
Honorable Fatou.
Chair,
I don't know, because I can't remember asking that the SABC is lying. Can the chairperson indicate who's saying that the SABC is lying before he proceeds? Because I can't remember anyone in your committee saying that the SABC is lying. Chair.
No, thanks, Honorable Fan. But you want to raise a point of order, Honorable Machos, because I want to just respond to this and then to proceed.
Oh, okay. No, I just wanted to say that maybe we should. I didn't hear the chairperson of the board saying that the committee said they lied. I heard him saying that the union said, and there was no protection of that because they had not given their response. So can we not just fight this committee for just fight?
Chairperson, if I
may,
what is the point, Honorable Fandam? Point of order? Okay, what's the point?
Can I please ask the SABC not to start building an acrimonious relationship with my members' committee. If you said chair, we are going to sit down and we're going to discuss the emergency. Can we please focus on the important matters that require our attention? As you always say, chair, we get sidetracked by side issues. There are big issues that need to be dealt with. So whether someone said you lied or whatever, just prove the lie and let us move on. There are bigger issues we need to deal with. And I'm quite frankly getting irritated with all these side issues we have to deal with. Sabotage, and then this one said you lied. Can we get on with it?
Thank you, Honorable Fandau. Let's start with Honorable Fago. I'm sure the board chair would have heard your point, which is agreed to by Honorable Fandau, but matters that are raised in the meeting would not mean being unfair or fair to anyone. We would have allowed people to present their views. It's against the chair of the board, against the service that we have given you an opportunity to respond to those. Some of the letters that you've responded to, I'm sure you'll agree with me, that you were responding also to matters raised by the other stakeholders other than the committee itself. And I'm sure that is clear. And I think at the end, it gets to be a bit of a problem because we thought after you would have summed up, then we don't have to follow it up. But members will be forced to follow up if we get to side issues, and especially if they have been raised by the other parties. You would know that at some point when this matter was raised by one member, which is on record, we cleared that point so that it's understood that you have got the right of reply and clarify matters before the committee. So please use that chair to close up, but we still have the next discussion where you can take up the other matters. I'm worried that the pace we are going, that we may also not do justice to the next discussion. And my worry is that we may repeat similar questions all the time and not move to a point where we say, what is it that our oversight is able to do to assist the SAUC to implement the general strategy, which the CEO said was presented to the shareholder as well as for this committee. So I would want us to just leave it for now and then to continue, Chair, to close.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I appreciate the opportunity and I think I'm ready to hand over to you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for your opportunity.
Thanks, Chair of the Board. As we said, for the next item, there will be those that would not be participating given the nature of the